From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief, with this week's Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. And all three articles that I'm going to talk about are being released in JACC, January 7th, 2019. This particular issue of JACC is loaded with very interesting articles, but there are three that really caught my attention. One looks at the differential impact of heart failure with reduced ejection fraction in men and women. Another looks at the long-term mortality and early valve dysfunction according to anticoagulation use in the France TAVI registry. And the last one looks at cardiac troponin elevation in patients who appear to be without a specific diagnosis at discharge in a very large study from Sweden. So let's get started. The first article asks the question, are there differences based on gender or sex in patients with HFrEF enrolled in recent trials? This is a wonderful analysis which used two large randomized trials, PARADIGM-HF and ATMOSPHERE. PARADIGM, remember, prospective comparison of ARNI with ACE to determine impact on global mortality and morbidity and heart failure. ATMOSPHERE was aliskiren, looking at outcomes in patients with heart failure. The patients in the studies numbered almost 15,000, of which about 3,500 were women. This included patients over the age of 18. They had to have New York Heart Class 2 to 4. The LVEF had to be less than or equal to 35%. They had an elevated natriuretic peptide level, and they had to be taking either an ACE and or an ARB, a beta blocker, and sometimes a combination if indicated. The primary outcome analyzed in the trials was a composite of first heart failure hospitalization or cardiovascular death in both of the trials, and components including sudden death, pump failure death, non-cardiovascular death, all-cause death. So as I stated, about 22% of the cohort were women. 37% were over the age of 70 compared to 28% of men. Hypertension was a little more common in women, and significant valve disease, slightly higher in women, but they were less likely to have major comorbid conditions like atrial fib, a previous MI, or stroke. Women in the trials had lower prevalence of CAD, 43% versus 56%, but they had more moderate or extreme depression and anxiety, at a fairly significant difference, 44% versus 29%. Women had been hospitalized for heart failure less often than men, and as expected, were less likely to have an ischemic etiology. Interestingly, women reported more signs of symptoms of heart failure than men, and they had worse quality of life scores and greater functional impairment than men. The use of medications was similar, but women seem to be less likely to receive a device than men, half as likely to have received an ICD, and CRT was 4.1% of women versus almost 7% in men. Women were also less likely to be referred for disease management or prescribed exercise. Ironically, women had a significantly lower mortality rate, hazard of 0.68, and a lower rate of heart failure hospitalizations. So study after study, this one included, suggests differences between men and women. In this particular case, trials of men and women enrolled for treatment of heart failure with reduced EF, despite the better survival and lower rates of hospitalization compared to men. Women had more signs and symptoms, poor quality of life, greater functional and psychological impairment than men, and alarmingly appeared to be receiving lower rates of some therapies, including ICD. So I think this article continues to argue that we really, really need future studies that provide adequate power to assess the differences in both diseases and their treatments comparing men and women across the spectrum. HFrEF, HFpEF, AFib, CAD, you name it. It's an important paper, and I hope you'll have a chance to review it. The second article looks at the long-term mortality and early valve dysfunction according to anticoagulation use in the France TAVI registry. As you probably know, this is a prospective multi-center nationwide French registry, and their effort is to identify correlates of long-term all-cause mortality and early bioprosthetic valve dysfunction and in this particular study, which was defined as either an increase in prosthetic gradient of greater than 10 millimeters from one study to the next, or a new gradient greater than 20 millimeters of mercury across the aortic valve. They did a multivariable analysis after picking potential univariate correlates at a p-value of less than 0.2. So this study included about 11,500 patients for whom about a year and a half of follow-up information was available after being discharged alive. And, of course, the investigators had to know the antithrombotic therapy. Over 2,500 patients had at least two echocardiographic evaluations and were eligible for this sense of early bioprosthetic failure. About a third of patients had a history of AFib, and the same proportion had oral anticoagulation at discharge. When they looked at the treatments, neither aspirin or clopidogrel was independently associated with mortality. The predictors of mortality were particularly three: male gender, history of AFib, and chronic renal failure. Anticoagulation at discharge had a hazard ratio of 0.54, and a non-femoral approach to the treatment also was independently associated with lower rates of bioprosthetic failure. Chronic renal failure and small prosthetic size were associated with a higher risk of bioprosthetic failure. So the authors concluded that the three most important predictors of mortality were male gender, renal failure, and AFib. And interestingly, that post-TAVR anticoagulation, given mostly for AFib, seemed to decrease the risk of bioprosthetic valve dysfunction compared to antiplatelet therapy. Now, obviously, this is a big question mark. The studies up to date have shown that there is a concern for early thrombosis around bioprosthetic valves that may cause significant dysfunction, but the number of randomized trials we have in this space is essentially nil. And this study really suggests that anticoagulation with oral anticoagulants, not antiplatelets, may be beneficial in reducing this risk. But there's a lot of confounders, of course. And even with a large registry study, this one really argues that we need a randomized trial looking at the potential value of anticoagulation after TAVR to see if this is both effective and potentially cost-effective. The last of the three papers I wanted to talk about in this week's podcast looks at cardiac troponin elevation in patients without a specific diagnosis. And again, this uses a large registry, SWEDHEART, which is a registry looking at patients with suspected acute coronary syndromes across all Swedish hospitals. In this study, the authors identified almost 50,000 patients in whom a cardiac troponin was measured and who were discharged without a specific diagnosis. And it looked at the association between the cardiac troponin levels, clinical characteristics, and long-term outcomes. And they used different subcohorts, patients without previous ACS, revascularization, stroke, or heart failure, another cohort looking at patients with renal dysfunction, and a third cohort looking at patients with low EF or a significant coronary stenosis on angiography. In this Swedish study, the vast majority of patients had been admitted for chest pain, and the prevalence of cardiac risk factors and LV dysfunction increased across the cardiac troponin strata, which had been divided into tertiles. 15% of patients, almost 7,500, experienced a major adverse event over a period of 5 years of follow-up. And the frequency of events increased in a stepwise fashion across those who had higher cardiac troponin levels. And these survival characteristics and curves diverged early within 6 months. Impressively, individuals who had high cardiac troponin levels and no evident risks risk factors for myocardial injury still had about a 3.5-fold increased risk of MACE out at 5 years. So it's an interesting study. Often we see cardiac troponin elevations in patients where we're really not quite sure what's lurking underneath. It's not clearly an ACS or heart failure or PE. And the authors suggest in this large registry that when you do see appropriately assayed cardiac troponin levels and you don't have a diagnosis, it is associated with higher risk. The question is, what can we do about it? And I think the first answer I would offer is that these patients require the best test in medicine, which is a very thorough and careful history, physical, and review of electrocardiograms. And not infrequently, going back to the bedside allows us to get a sense for, okay, there is an issue here. It simply previously was unrecognized. So a great issue of JACC to start the new year, and I've found three articles that I thought were interesting, at least to me, and hopefully for you. I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org, and you can find these articles and the key points about them on the ACC's website. Also, you'll find a new educational catalog that we're featuring on the site located under Education and Meetings tab. Using this tool, you can sort our educational offerings by various formats, and many of these, of course, are free. Find us online or wherever you get your podcasts. And until next week, I hope you have a great one. Thank you.